Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we venture out of the basement again and go backstage at a club
where we talk to a real rock star.
Is it Rod Stewart?
Okay, we are back in the basement and I have a pint glass here full of something. What is this?
This is an interesting beer, isn't it? It's a red IPA from our friends at Stone Brewery. And it's quite good, isn't it? Hop forward. Very tasty.
It's not a Red Wolf.
No, it is not. It's not a St. Pauli girl either. Yeah,
that's right. Red beer used to be a big thing about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It kind of died out, but I like this a lot. This is a red IPA.
Yeah,
I
mean, red IPA. It's quite delicious.
Different somehow.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
So, Patrick, we took the recording machine.
We did.
To Jam and Java. We interviewed Dave from Mara. If you did not listen to part one of that interview, listener, you should go back.
Definitely go back, listener.
It's great stuff. He has a great style that I think will, you know, speaking style that I think will captivate you.
Yes.
We didn't have to ask a lot of questions.
No. It was one of those, you know, we'll set you up and you can go off for quite a long time and talk, which is why we're offering the entire interview on our website.
Right.
Eventually it'll be up there. You can listen to the whole thing unedited, warts and all.
That's right. That is suburbspod.com.
Suburbspod.com.
And I think we should get into part two of interview here. He's going to talk a little bit about Rod Stewart, which is really fun.
That's great.
And then we have some stuff about the Mara's latest album, which was really different for them, right?
Very different. And so you'll learn all about that. It was a really interesting thing that they put together. But at some point, it was around 2008, they had a deal with the Yep Rock label. They kind of left that label and the band, the brothers, Serge and Dave, sort of split up. Serge was living in Utah with his family, but Dave kind of moved to the mountains of Pennsylvania. So kind of a different
mountains of,
thing for him, right? And he was kind of out there doing a different thing. And so that led to some different kind of ways of thinking about music, and he's going to talk about that.
All right, let's get to the interview.
Yeah.
I want to go back to one thing. Rod Stewart, wasn't it, as a kid, you know, I think we're roughly about the same age. As a kid, wasn't it sort of mind-blowing when you realize, wait, the guy who sang, like, Some Guys Have All the Luck was in a cool band?
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, again, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there, I guess, with lessons of business, the art meeting the business or whatever.
Right.
I bring him up a lot because his band was super cool, and I bring him up a lot because he was such a super cool unsung songwriter, in my opinion.
Yeah.
There are certain things. He was so nostalgic for some country home that he may or may not have come from.
Right.
But so brilliant, some of his songs. And next to Mick and Keith or whatever, he gets absolutely no credit as a songwriter. Again, he's surrounded by some of the real, you know, the real Mount Rushmore of English rock and roll.
Yeah.
And, but if you really get to the end of like a DJ night and you drop Every Picture Tells a Story or You Wear It Well is killing me.
Yeah. Oh,
it's so beautiful, you know, and like talking to a girl who's not that hot and doing that thing. And Springsteen stole all those connections, you know. It was very common. It was very common, you know, and he's such an uncommon human being. There's nothing common about Rod Stewart when he opens his mouth and walks on stage with no shirt and yellow pants. You know, he was Little Richard, you know, in a pub. Badass. I mean, beyond words. I've pushed people towards his music and stuff. Whether they can see it through the years, you know, that connection, that's on you, you know.
That's right.
You know? But yeah, it's in my heart for sure.
I had nothing to do on this hot afternoon but to settle and write you a line. I've been meaning to burn your book for Minnesota. It's been a very long time. You wear it well. A little old fashioned, but that's all right.
Okay, this is a good time for a little break. We're going to promote ourselves or something else, and then we'll come back and hear more from Dave on Rockin' the Suburbs, starring me, I'm Jim Lenihan.
And me, Patrick Foster. Jim, I don't know about you, but I'm a relentless reviewer. I review everything.
Well, I know you used to review like records and shows and things like that, right?
Now I review like chicken and toasters and like fungus cream and everything. I just review it all the time. And I think that people should, you know, review our podcast.
They should.
Why not?
Give it a better review than the fungus cream, hopefully.
This is good fungus cream.
Well, I mean, if you need it, then you would give it a good review, exactly. I suppose. Yeah.
It's your time of need.
But hopefully you value our podcast in sort of a different way.
You'll need it in a different way, probably more regularly than fungus cream, let's hope.
Let's hope so. Or may need to consult people beyond our, you know, depth of knowledge.
That's right. But, you know, I gave 5 stars to the fungus cream. I think 5 stars for Rockin' the Suburbs.
I think that's very good advice, Dr. Patrick. What people can do is they can go on to iTunes.
Yes.
Find the show, search Rockin' the Suburbs, or hopefully you've already subscribed, so it just comes right up.
Yep.
And then you can just click the 5-star button. And if it'd be really cool, too, if while you're there, you actually write like a little review of how much you like the show.
That'd be great.
Both of those things really help us. It elevates it in the iTunes platform. More people then discover the show. We build audience.
Immensely helpful.
And building audience will help keep the show going. So please, do that. It's totally free. It's just a nice thing to do for us.
And if you want to mention fungus cream, go ahead.
All right. Let's never say fungus cream again.
Good idea.
Okay, and we're back. Patrick, we should get right back into the interview.
Yeah, we should.
This, you really got to hear this. This is some really fascinating stuff about the art of songwriting.
Yeah, we asked Dave kind of how he's writing songs now and how he's always gone about it.
I think he really gets it.
Yeah. I want to go back a little bit to the most recent thing you guys released, which I don't know if enough people have heard, certainly not, in my opinion, and I haven't seen a ton really written about it, which I think is kind of a shame. So it was called Mountain Minstrelly of Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
is that right?
Weird word, right?
Yeah, like, minstrelly.
So it's the word minstrel. Yeah.
You have to look at it a few times.
Yeah,
you do. I couldn't even say it.
So tell us a little bit about how that came about and the way you
marketing genius, it's important to release a record that no one can pronounce.
That's right.
That was our first thing. And then we looked
poems by some obscure guy from the early 1900s, right?
Yeah. It's super cool in that it ties really into the morale story so much. Serge said no. He was not going to play rock and roll with Dave right now. And I had nothing. Me and Christine, the piano player, we had nothing at that moment. Uh-huh. And in the most organic, natural way, we started to look around us, you know, and we looked at this tiny little village that we were living in out in the middle of Pennsylvania, like very Amish farmland, Pennsylvania, a beautiful place filled with awesome people that have a strange homespun integrity. One night we were getting drunk in some cabin and someone hands me a book, says Pennsylvania Mountain Minstrelsy, an old book, filled with song lyrics that no one knew how they went anymore. I'm so intrigued by this. I made it deal. I have to take this book with me. I'll give it back to you tomorrow. I still have the book. So then we just started this process of what if we did a record that was Morat presents something, which quite frankly is something I'm really interested in doing again.
Okay.
You know, I want, I, I'm in touch with doo-wop people in New Jersey.
Really? You know,
75-year-old dudes that like what we're doing and want to make a record. I go crazy. I can't even talk about it right now, but that's... I'm valuable there. You know, I'm valuable in empowering people in that kind of a situation. So it, those ideas drive me crazy. The Mountain Minstrelsy thing, the fact that these songs had existed and had completely blown away and remained as like lyrics that, and they literally would be footnotes that say, I think it went like this. My grandma said it went like this, you know?
Right.
Wow.
Right.
So that gave us the liberty to change anything, to write a chorus, to make a record, and then to try to corral a local group of non-professional musicians, including a brilliant 8-year-old kid, you know, who became our best friend in the process. And, you know, if you're a musician, and there's a lot of musicians, I guess, that listen to podcasts like that. If you are a musician, take my advice here. It's really hard to learn from your peers. Try learning from a kid, because they will teach you things that you just didn't really, or you had fallen out of connection with, visceral Bo Diddley type things, that become, damn, that's something I really needed to actually learn that, at, you know, on in your life, it's really hard to connect with new information, that can deliver you somewhere. So lessons of rhythm and things like that. And watching this kid Gus, learn how to work the old tape recorder, and just, it was so cool. We're putting Star Wars guys on the spinning reels, and there was a fun part to it. There was a really worrisome part, because we were certainly flying with, we were recording that music onto tape and not backing it up, and we had no gear or anyone in the business helping us or anything. So it was a really, like, you know, down the basement kind of project. And it took longer than we thought. But in the end, you know, when you held it and you played it, super cool. I'm super proud of it. And it did. It linked us to the very next time that me and my brother were in a car together. And he's like, well, I think I'd be into like playing adult rock and roll again, you know. And it was funny because it was a weird process of like, I stopped listening to rock and roll. If you would have put on a rock and roll record in my house, I would have gone crazy. Like, just turned away from it for a period of 4 years or something. I listened to country blues and big bands and stuff, but rock and roll felt so irrelevant and so awful and just so desperate and white and boring and, you know. But then I blasted out of the end of Mountain Minstrelsy, and it was like, oh my God, if I ever see another mandolin, you know what I mean?
So how are you writing songs today? Is it different than the way you wrote songs in 1993?
Yeah. God, yeah.
I mean, I'm hoping you're gonna say I have 50 or 60 songs that I've written that I haven't recorded yet.
But it's a great question. I mean, there's definitely more famous, very talented songwriters that could speak to this better than me, because you would tend to believe them more. But the act, I think the act becomes more of, it's way more painful now. I mean, to literally commit to something and say, this is a song I want to sing, you know, at this point in my life, is way harder now than it is. Your bullshit, my bullshit detector, my standards are so warped compared to what I'm looking for, you know, is something in a 1973 Jamaican reggae record or whatever. You know, it's hard to explain what it is. So my standards are really out there. It's literally banging your head on the piano looking for the simplest thing that everyone just missed. Honestly, that's, you're looking for a song that would not even inspire professional jealousy. People would be happy that you wrote it, because we can all celebrate it, you know. It's like, what would it be? It would be sometimes in my life, da, na, na, lean on me. You know what I mean? Right. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Looking for the simplest thing that you miss through your entire career. So yeah, it's way harder, man. It's way harder.
But you're doing it.
But yeah, you fight that battle, and I fight it every day. You know, I sit with my guitar every day, and I play the pedals on an organ, and I sit there and play a loud spring reverb-y electric guitar to see if I can find it in a sound, in a because it's everywhere. You know, it's not really it's not one place you have to look, but you do have to, you know, really wring yourself, your brain out, and try to connect with something very simple at first, and then again the muses start to communicate and you could pull it into a whole different place. And the coolest thing I think we got is we can back it up, you know. I know I've got the boys that could play the thing in a circle, you know, and then we could back it up on stage, you know, because I feel like the number one thing we've done is be able to be a live rock and roll band, you know, that can play a show that has a beginning and an ending and picks you up here and drops you off there, and perhaps you're better off for it. So yeah, it's really tempting, and it keeps me going back to that piano, guitar, organ situation every day, hoping maybe that something will reveal itself, because it's in the simplicity. It's in Chuck Berry's records, you know. It's in the telling the story. God, to be able to tell the story of the United States in February of 2017, it would be mega. I mean, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's a quadruple album. It's the greatest thing I've ever heard. And it's in my head, but, you know, how do you get there?
Yeah.
So you just start hacking away.
Now, that would be a warped story, the story of America.
Yeah, exactly,
February 2017. Right. Absolutely.
Science fiction.
Okay, that was great stuff.
Yeah, fantastic.
I really liked hanging out with Dave.
Yeah, what a nice guy.
He was a nice guy, and you can just tell, just really thoughtful. Mm-hmm. Like, he really, I mean, you know, I think he's experienced a lot. The band Mirage.
I do too.
They recorded their first album. It was released in 98.
98.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Let's Cut the Crap and Hook Up Later On Tonight.
Great title.
What the title of a debut album. Yeah. Yep.
They've been around for a while, and they've experienced a lot in the music business.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of all of it, what really drives him is just that pursuit of a great song.
Yeah.
And I think you heard that there.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty fascinating stuff.
Yeah. Okay, so keep listening to Rock in the Suburbs on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, TuneIn.
Mixtapes.
Mixtapes. Maybe there's, you know, cars passing down the street with their windows down, you know, cruising.
That's right.
And they're listening to it, and you can just kind of, like, you know, hear what they have going on. Things like that, right?
Lean on a lamppost. Yeah, you'll hear it.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you can go to the appliance store and have them, you know, tune in the crystal set.
That's right.
To Rock in the Suburbs.
On the shortwave, yeah, if you're right. Overseas.
Yeah. Any of those things, Patterson's Appliance, they have it going.
That's right.
What we want you to do, though, is not listen to it just like on a whim once in a while. We want you to listen to it
every day.
Every day. And you can also visit our website, as Patrick mentioned earlier, at suburbspod.com. Mm-hmm. There you can also email the show, rock@suburbspod.com.
Okay.
You can also find us on social media. That would be Facebook or Twitter, @suburbspod. And you can call our suburban party line.
Dial it up.
Dave will not answer, but we would love it if he would.
Maybe we'll pass the message
along.
Maybe we can
get him to record a message.
Yeah. An answering machine message with Dave would be great.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Let's ask him about that.
And I think that number is 612-440-1984. So do that. Tomorrow we're going to have a little bit more from Dave.
Yeah.
Listen to that and listen to some more Mirah.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
I can honestly say there's a it's not so much a matter of opinion. You know, people get so like, well, it's music, so it's all like, you know, blah, blah, I like this, and these are my curtains, and they speak of my feelings. No, they don't, you know. The Clash made good rock and roll records, and Billy Squire didn't, dude. It's not, you know, it's not up to debate or whatever. There are certain facts, and the things that we are dealing with or have been trying to deal with, mummers string bands, yeah, and doo-wop music and Appalachian music and Big Bill Brunzi and Chuck Berry and Howlin' Wolf, those things are not debatable, man. They are the foundation of the greatest thing our nation has ever done, which is music. That's it, dude. That is our greatest contribution. I mean, it ain't banking, you know, it ain't, yeah, it ain't, you know, Apple computers, is it? I mean, am I crazy? No, it, you know, it's Louis Armstrong, and it's this thing that connected people and got them through some pretty shitty lives. The music, the joy, the family, the friendships, all of that. That's what's been important to me. I don't look at them as my own personal taste. Like, I like watching this show and not that show. I'm plugged into the big show, you know, whether you want to watch it or not, or that's fine. You can Netflix something else.